Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. Really, this is kind of the fifth part of our Jiu-Jitsu Is series. It really isn't, it's the last part of our series that we will not be doing intro-outro on, and it is still just me talking, and this will be the end of my paternity leave, so hopefully... You know, I haven't pulled all my hair out and I've gotten some sleep at this point and, you know, everything's good. So we'll see. Who knows? But I thought this one would be fun. I'm going to try to get, I have 20 questions in front of me and they're kind of structured a little more than usual. They're not just all 20 random questions. They kind of are, what would you call that? They're all in topics. And I'm going to try to answer them relatively quickly so I can see if I can get through the 20. You guys know how long-winded I am when I'm doing a podcast, so we'll see if that actually works. Before we get into any of the questions, just wanted to make sure to remind you, this is, I think, it's hard for me to do the math of how far out I'm planning all these episodes, but I'm pretty sure that this will be the last chance for you guys to get your I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show gear. We have our gi and no gi kits from Imposed Will. This is the second time we've done a collaboration with them. The last one went off without a hitch. People loved it. But this is a pre-sale. And so the pre-sale ends on Halloween night at midnight, at the stroke of midnight on Halloween. If you light the candle, the pre-sale will end and they will start production of our new gis and our new rash guards. And this will probably take 4 to 6 weeks to get to you after that. And so it'll be right around Christmas time. You should be getting your new I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show gear. This is probably the only time that you guys are going to get the chance to do it, because if you know me, you know that I don't do a lot of stuff. And so this is the time to do it. You guys should absolutely get in on it. But besides that, yeah, links in the description. Imposedwill.com. Get it. But besides that, let's get into today's episode. And this is me answering 20 questions. I love the start. What is one technique that you believe is underutilized in BJJ competitions today? Not even a doubt, not even a second thought. I tell my students this all the time. Double underpass. I think that the double underpass, and not in a sense that you have to pass off of it immediately, but double under hides you behind the crooks of somebody's knees. And to me, with my arms, if my arms are in the crooks of your knees, that is defensive. I have so much control of your legs, and it's very easy for me to push against the crooks of your knees and create what I would call excessive distance, okay? So as a skill set and an ability to control the time and the match, double underpass is absolutely the most underutilized jiu-jitsu technique that I think that there is right now. And it's something that a lot of old school guys are still great at. But people just, for whatever reason, they look down on that pass. And I really, really think that you shouldn't. Okay, we made it through one question. Only 19 more to go. How do you prioritize which techniques or positions to focus on during your training sessions? So I talk about this a lot for you guys, but I like to base what I'm focused on by what's inspiring me. And then I will keep that until it stops inspiring me. I will keep doing that and I will keep, you know, attacking that forever. And it's like, okay, for instance, the double underpass. When I started to notice that this was something that people were utilizing as a strategy, hold you in double under for a long period of time, get up two and then hold you and, you know, get double unders on you. And the bottom guy would waste energy. And since a lot of people don't do the pass anymore, a lot of the bottom guys don't even have a good way to deal with it. And so for me, that was a bit of inspiration. And so I focused on it, right? I told you guys I've gotten to learn from Henry Akins a lot recently. That is inspiration. That is going to give me stuff to work on and to focus on. I always tell you guys for 6 weeks to 6 months. I think that that is how you get good at jiu-jitsu, is you just take these things in blocks like that. you find a new move, a new technique, or a new idea. Maybe you purchased the chest over chest seminar from simplifyingjujitsu.com where you learn about the two distances of guard passing and you learn where you can be safe and where not. And then you learn how to flatten people, you learn how to pass people's guards. You can focus on chest over chest. I focused on chest over chest for 3 years straight, and I'm not exaggerating on that. That's really like, but I was also developing the ideas too. You get the completely formulated ideas, so you don't have to work on it as long, but at least 6 months. That idea is so strong and it's so important. I think working on it for 6 months is definitely valuable. And so, you just kind of decide what is inspiring you at the time, and you actually commit and you actually focus on it. So now let's look at the next question. What is your take on integrating unconventional or funky, they put quotes on that, moves into someone's game? We talked last week, or the last episode that just came out, about jiu-jitsu is cooking. We talked about like the idea of self-expression. And I want to say I didn't even dig on this like I intended to, but when you try to be different only to be different, a lot of times that isn't a very good reason, right? When you try to be different because it brings you joy, that's different, right? When I just enjoy doing this type of guard pass or this type of sweep, and it just is what tickles my fancy, what inspires me, I think that you put that into your game. I think that it can easily be put as this thing where I become the guy that only does weird stuff and I do weird stuff for no reason. We've got to think of efficiency and effectiveness, right? If the weird, funky stuff that I'm doing is wasting a lot of energy, it's not very valuable for me to be doing. And so I think that there's nothing wrong with putting these things into your game and even making these things your game, but there is something wrong if it is at the cost of your game being effective or your game being good. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. Those were kind of the techniques and training. I like this mindset and mental preparation are kind of the next topic. How do you mentally prepare yourself before a big competition or match? Man, all these questions that are on this are kind of similar. What strategies do you employ to overcome performance anxiety, fear of losing? Can you share an instance where you had a battle of self-doubt and how you overcame it? Okay, let's start with, I'll probably answer those first two together. How do you prepare yourself mentally and what strategies do you employ to overcome performance anxiety or the fear of losing? I've talked about this before on the episode. I have a whole episode called Champion Stay Present. And it is all about understanding that your job as a competitor is to be in the moment, because it is impossible for us to predict what will actually happen. We can always hope for our first three movements, our little grip fight, our guard pull, and first hook or first frame or whatever, right? We can see those things. But besides that, trying to visualize anything else, in my opinion, it doesn't have a lot of value, because you're not going to actually be in those places. You don't know what situation is going to arise. I don't have a ton of, obviously I'm recording these before my baby comes. These last six episodes we've done have been me on paternity leave, and they were all done before I actually had the baby. And something that I've loved about our doctor, I'll come back and I'll give you guys the honest opinion on if this actually works out, and I actually do love this about our doctor, but she understands being in the moment. And so, we want to put together this birth plan, and she's like, okay, we'll put together this birth plan, but I need you guys to understand this. There, we may have to make turns. We may have to change things because we don't know what's going to happen. And she goes, and we can try to have a plan for every little thing that could happen. She goes, but there's a million little things that could happen. And so what we do instead is, in the moment, I make sure that I can get at least 5 minutes to explain to you guys what's happening and let you guys make a conscious decision on it. And to me, I really understood that because I understand grappling competition. And grappling competition is this: I can worry about all these other things that are out of my control and waste my energy doing that and add more anxiety to me doing that. Or I can accept that I am going to be anxious and I be present in that moment. When I'm anxious, I'm thankful for it. I say, you know what? You know who else gets to experience this? This feeling of life or death? Nobody. There is so much enjoyment in this suffering that I have to deal with because I'm willing to be in the moment. There was this point this year that I had to cut like 4 or 5 pounds in 2.5 hours. Was I irresponsible? Of course. That was on me, but it was still miserable. And I kept reminding myself as I was sweating, as I was running around, as I was actually rummaging through other people's bags so I could steal a lightweight gi. And I did steal, I don't know, hey, somebody at the Atlanta Open, if your gi got pulled out of your bag, your black A1 gi that was absolutely too small to fit me got pulled out of your bag and then left just on top of your bag. And you're like, hey, what happened? I wore your gi to weigh in. I just want you to know that. And so, but in that time, the whole time, all I did was stay present. I'm like, hey, this could easily be the last time that I get to compete. This could be the last time that I get to cut weight, right? You could never know what's going to happen in life. You never know what's going to happen in that match. Actually, in that match, I told you guys about this on the Jiu-Jitsu is Football episode. I got a concussion in that match. And to me, I was able to stay present enough to still win the match. It was miserable. I was freaking out. I was thinking, I'm not going to compete after this. Like, I was making that decision in my mind. And that was me wrestling with not being present. Anytime you're thinking about, well, what am I going to say if I lose? Not present. What am I going to say if I win? Not present. You are only able to control what is happening in that specific moment. We are only in one moment. And that is, to me, that is the strategy that I use. That is how I beat the fear of losing, is I don't think about it. Because if I lose, yeah, it sucks. It's going to suck. Every time you lose, it's miserable. I hate it. One of my students lost the other day, and I'm like, yeah, man, I would love to tell you that you'll get over it. But this guy over here on the, you know, the other side of the room, he beat me a year ago, and all I can think about is getting him again. It's all I can think about. So maybe you'll never get over it. Who knows? Losing's terrible. It's the worst. Don't fear it though. Don't think about it though. When it comes, you deal with it. When it happens, you deal with it. But when you start to focus on the future, a lot of times it allows you to lose. It prevents you from winning. And so my big thought is, you deal with mental struggles, you deal with performance anxiety. That is how you beat the fear of losing. And then my instance of my battle of self-doubt and how I overcame it was that same match I just told you about. I had a concussion. I'm down 4 points. And I'm starting to recognize my body is not functioning right for some reason. And in my mind, I'm going, oh, it's just the weight cut. And then like, I would start to move and I would be like, oh, I'm just exhausted. And it started to hit me that I wasn't breathing heavy. And I started to panic because that's when I started, you know, I got headbutted pretty good. And in the first couple seconds of the match, my lip was bleeding. They stopped the bleeding. And I didn't even recognize, like, while the dude is trying to work on my lip and it's split bad, I'm like, hey man, how are you doing? And he like looks at me kind of weird. I'm not recognizing that this is a weird time to try to have this conversation. And but anyway, in the match, I could feel myself freaking out. I could feel the self-doubt. Like, dude, just, you're ready to just walk off the mat right now. I'm like having it felt like a panic attack because I'm realizing that I am concussed. And I focused on what I could control. And honestly, I couldn't even think through the position, but my student was coaching me, Richie, and he was thinking through the position for me. And he kept me motivated enough to score as many points as I needed to be able to then play prevent and win the match. And I ended up not being able to compete the rest of the day, of course, but that was a bit of self-doubt. And even when my brain wasn't functioning, I was able to function. And to me, that comes from great training. That comes from like being in bad situations and training. So even though I had never prepped myself by pre-giving myself a concussion before training, I was prepped for that situation because I knew how to deal with adversity. Let's move on. As a coach, how do you identify and nurture potential students who may not naturally be athletically gifted? I make sure that they keep showing up. That's it. I make sure that they're having fun. Because I've seen people that are so not athletic get really good. And the only way that they can do that is by continuing to be there consistently. Let's look at the next one. What's your philosophy on drilling versus live sparring for skill development? I don't think I'm not one of those people who say, oh, deadpan drilling is useless. Now, that don't get me wrong. I have really good students that have actually never really deadpan drilled a move, like at all, especially repetitively. But I also have good students that like to train that way. You look at JT Torres, one of the best grapplers ever, one of the best Americans of all time, huge on drilling. You look at Andrew Wiltsey, another one of the best Americans of all time, huge on drilling. Personally, I'm not. I don't like to do it. But to discount it and say, well, those guys are just wrong, I think that's ignorant. Do I think it's the most effective use of time? No. I think designated winter is the most effective use of time, if I'm being honest. That's why I push it. It's why I do it. But I don't think that drilling should be looked down upon like it has been. But then on the other side, just live rolling, I don't think you get enough reps of the things you should be working just live rolling. I think that's one of the harder ways to get good. At least with drilling repetitively, you get to choose what you're working. When you start and you're just live rolling and you suck, you were just working bottom mount for the first year, bottom side control for the first year. It's like, yeah, maybe that's helpful. But to me, sparring positionally, drilling positionally, designated winter, doing things like that to get your reps, I think you should get all those things. I think don't close your mind off to other things. Question 9. Wow, we're strolling through, guys. How do you handle students with a large skill gap in the same class, ensuring both advanced students and beginners are benefiting? That's a really tough question. I like to focus on big ideas because I understand these big ideas deeper all the time. And so I understand that my high-level guys will be able to do the same thing. They're going to be able to understand these ideas deeper. And so they'll go, oh, chest over chest. I get it now. And then like it was revealed to them more. And then it was revealed to them more. And so that's something I think about a lot is if I can give a general enough idea of how to accomplish whatever the goal is and just explain that goal, everybody is able to gather something from it. And then as I go around, I see who actually got it and who hasn't. And so that to me is like the best way to deal with it. But then the other best way to deal with it is to have smaller classes where you can give more individual attention. I think that's one of the most valuable things. But I do love big classes too. But like for me, getting my noon classes that I teach are some of my favorite classes, and it's like 8 guys and 3 of them will be black belts. And we just come in and talk ideas. A lot of times we will not actually roll in the training session. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we roll the whole training session, but sometimes it is just designated winter and it's just ideas and it's just ideas. We're all getting on the same page. And to me, I even benefit from that as the coach. I get better from that as the coach. So of course, my advanced students are getting better and my beginners are getting better. Let's look at some more thoughts. What are some common mistakes you see even high-level competitors make and how can they be avoided? Simplest one, wasting energy on things that aren't jiu-jitsu. I see guys wanting to do jumping jacks before their match because they think they saw another guy doing it. And a lot of times It is nervous energy that you're just trying to get out of your body. I think you should do a warm-up, but I think it should be defined. And then your warm-up should end. And then you should be waiting to compete. If you need to do some movement, then you do the movement. But there are guys that waste energy, whether by going and trying to coach their friends, or whether by going, just all kinds of other ways that people take that stress that, like we talked about before, you need to just be learn to sit in. You need to learn to sit in that anxiety and understand that that anxiety in that moment is going to pass eventually, and then it will be time to compete. And if you wasted all kinds of energy talking too much, joking too much, doing too much, it can cost you in the match. And I think that this is even more prevalent when I do pro shows that are at night. I see so many guys be so nervous. And my thing for my students is leave, go into a corner, go watch Seinfeld on your phone, chill out. Don't, you know, there's no amount of worry. We are as prepared as we will ever be. There is no amount of worrying about the next moment that can change things for us. And so that is, to me, I see this over and over from even good black belts. They don't perform well because they waste so much energy not being in the moment. How do you recover and reassess after a loss in a major competition? It's always going to be different. I tell you what I don't do. I tell you guys this a lot. You don't make any excuses. When you make an excuse, you rob yourself from the ability to grow. Anytime it becomes somebody else's fault that you lost, it stops being your fault. And you can't control what other people do and say and believe and think. You can only control what you do. And so my big thing is I don't make excuses. If I didn't think I won the match, or if I thought I won the match and I didn't get the decision, I thought I had points I shouldn't have, keep my mouth shut. Shut up. Nobody cares. A lot of times you have to go back to, I have to go back to coaching anyway, you know, and that's like, I have to go back to being a teammate anyway. And so my big thing is I don't try to fix problems while I'm there. I don't worry about it. I try to make sure that I take responsibility for the loss. Even if I'm struggling, sometimes I will be frustrated and I'll be like, man, that wasn't my fault. This shouldn't have happened, whatever, right? But somewhere or another, I can find that there was a flaw in my jiu-jitsu. And to me, just finding that flaw, trying not to beat myself up about it. And don't get me wrong, I have beaten myself up about losses. I still do. I try not to. It's just hard sometimes. You're just like, you want to win really bad sometimes. I can think of a moment this year of losing, and I felt so discouraged. Honestly, I don't know if I have ever felt more disappointed, and it wasn't a big event. It was just a match I know I should have won, and I lost, and I was so frustrated. And part of it was just sitting in it. Part of it, too, is also having good teammates, man. I was so discouraged, and we were not home, and Bryce and I had driven separately, and it was a pro show, and it was like 1 a.m, and he hung out with me for like an extra hour just until he thought I was okay to head home. And seeing that was like, man, having a teammate like that, you know, he's one of my students, but just having somebody like that there, that makes such a difference. To sit in that frustration and that shame with you of losing. And then we moved on. And then we went into, what could I have done better? What do I need to fix? And for me, the fixing wasn't as much the technical stuff. It was more the competitive stuff and learning how to fix stuff. And did I fix that stuff? We'll see. But, you know, a lot of times I look at my loss at Worlds. I still haven't decompressed from that loss, because as I walked off the mat, I like did my normal collapse from exhaustion. And as soon as my back hit the mat, my buddy Jake Watson was like, hey, you want to come commentate the world championships with me, bro? And I was like, yeah, I've never commentated anything before. That sounds fun. And while out of breath, while still pouring sweat in gi pants, I started commentating the worlds, and what turned was supposed to be 5 minutes turned into like 2 hours of me getting to commentate. But again, it's kind of like having the right friends there, right? I'm not saying that's always what happens. It's never happened before, but having the right friends seems to make a huge difference. Given the nature of BJJ, how do you manage injury prevention and recovery? Flexibility, strength, those two things are huge. Don't overtrain. If you do those three things, you almost will never get injured in jiu-jitsu. How do you know if you're overtrained? You have to learn to be mindful of yourself, right? Because sometimes you get so exhausted and you're so beat up from training because you aren't in great shape, right? And so sometimes you just do need to push through and continue to get better in better shape. But sometimes when, and this is how you can always, I think it was Mark Vives that gave us this. This is like a really simple way to know if you're overtrained or not. He says, can you do the things that you can usually do? Because some days I would go into guard to go past people's guards, and it was like my legs were in quicksand. And I never was smart enough to just recognize that that meant that I was overtrained. And so if you're interested in how to be stronger as a jiu-jitsu athlete, then the way to do it, simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/15. It is my dad's strength and conditioning program. It's one I've been on forever. And it is a conceptual approach to a 15-minute full body high intensive workout that I do once a week. And a lot of my athletes do once a week. And then the most that you would be required to do it is twice a week. Check that out if strength and conditioning sounds good for you. Also, when it comes to flexibility, stretch every day. I know it sounds like such a tall order. It doesn't have to be long. Stretch for a couple minutes every day in the morning. Touch your toes. You will start to be more mindful of your flexibility in your body, and you will literally start to, for me, my stretching routine is I kind of go straight leg, dead hang, reaching for my toes, and then I see what else is tight in that first stretch, and then that's where I decide if I need to stretch more, if I need to roll out, if I need to do any of these other things. That's one of the easiest ways for me to prevent injury is through flexibility and through strength. Do you have any specific routines or exercises that you swear by for keeping your body competition ready? Well, shoot, I just answered that. yes, simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/15. You guys would absolutely love that. This is really the approach that I have used since I have been 17 and competing against steroid athletes and never doing steroids. And I've been able to compete against these guys and beat these guys forever. And now I'm 29 and my body is beat up from 15 years of really hard jiu-jitsu training and competition. And I am still getting strength gains and I am still noticing the effectiveness and the importance of this strength routine. So yes, that is my answer for a specific exercise routine that I swear by. Do you ever hit plateaus in your training? And if so, how do you navigate it? Get inspired. I already answered this one, but that is the answer. Find inspiration. Watch jiu-jitsu tournaments to find inspiration. Watch instructionals. Watch my chest over chest seminar. Go to a different gym's open mat. Find something that inspires you. And you will notice that it is so exciting again. And it's easy to beat the plateau. It's easy to be in the plateau. And then eventually you start to get better. How do you keep the passion alive and stay motivated, especially after achieving a black belt? Inspiration. It seems to be my answer for a lot of these questions. I should have read these questions before and whittled them down. But find inspiration. It's harder as you get better. It's harder as you become a black belt to find things that inspire you in jiu-jitsu. But you find it. You find your inspiration. And it won't always be the same. The Josh McKinney BJJ YouTube channel may not always be what inspires you. Maybe the chest over chest ideas, maybe these ideas of distance and these ideas of control that I always talk about, maybe they become redundant at some point. And then you go, well, I need to be inspired somewhere else. And that is my inspiration on, or my idea on keeping your passion, staying motivated, beating plateaus, all of these things is consistency, of course, getting your reps, of course, but to be consistent, to get your reps, you need something that is inspiring you. So find jiu-jitsu inspiration. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions left. How has jiu-jitsu influenced other aspects of your life outside of the mat? I think jiu-jitsu gives you these skills. When you start to do it for a long time, it gives you skills that you can apply to other things. Obviously, the skill of resilience, the skill of being able to suck and be okay with it. I've learned how to video edit. I have learned how to video record. I have learned how to build a podcast. I've learned how to podcast. I've learned how to audio edit. I've learned how to do all of these other skills that are required for this content creation journey that I've been on. But I would say all of those skills came from me being able to know how to learn something. And that is to learn that you're going to suck when you first start recording video. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to suck when you first start podcasting. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. If you stay consistent, and you find things that what? That inspire you, it won't matter. Eventually, you will learn these things and eventually you will get good. And so I would say just how to learn is the biggest thing that jiu-jitsu has taught me. And how to learn things that aren't jiu-jitsu. Can you share some nutrition and diet tips that have worked for you for maintaining energy and performance? Don't eat like me. I'm not releasing any diet books, guys, for a reason. In season, I've been very, very good. And honestly, even out of season until like maybe the last few weeks, I've been pretty good. But It's like there's this movie called Land of the Lost with Will Ferrell. There's this one point he's eating and the girl goes, "What are you eating?" And he goes, "It's a donut stuffed with M&Ms. That way when you finish your donut, you don't have to eat any M&Ms." That's been the diet that I've been on lately. So I don't want to hit you with the, "Oh yeah, I'm always dieting." But I will say this, when I actually am dieting, the big things that are helpful for me is eating things that are real food, eating things that don't cause inflammation. Donuts stuffed with M&Ms, not real food, cause inflammation. Are they freaking delicious? Of course. I'm not looking down on you. I eat them too. But if the goal is, you know, simple diet tip to be energized and to perform well, eat real food. Eat things that grow. Eat things that were alive. And honestly, it is almost hard for most people to gain weight by just doing that, even without restricting calories. Why? Because these things are so much less calorie dense than donuts stuffed with M&Ms. Whew, I'm going to go get a donut after this, guys. Let's look. Who have been the most influential mentors or opponents in the jiu-jitsu world? Let's just go mentors. I hate anyone I've ever competed against. No, I'm just joking. But influential mentors, my dad, no doubt, top one. You know, I've told you guys this. You guys have met my dad on the show. There is nobody even close that has influenced my life more than my dad. And not just what he has told me, but seeing how he has lived his life. And seeing the discipline that he has lived his life with. I never even questioned dedicating my life to jiu-jitsu because I have seen my dad dedicate his life to things. So that is one of the most influential people. And then the second one, my coach, Kyle Watson. I've been under the same coach since day one. Why is that? Is it because I'm super loyal? Is it because I'm anti-Creonte? No. It isn't. It's because I lucked out. It's because I was blessed with this amazing coach, this amazing mentor. I got to watch this guy from Raymond, Illinois. And I know you guys are like, "Oh, you're from Granite City, Illinois. Is that the same thing?" No. We look down on people from Raymond, Illinois. You see where I'm from and I go, "Oh," and you go, "Oh, that Josh lives in the sticks." And then I have students that I look at, you know, my student Jeff, who's always in my shorts. He lives in Gillespie. Like, yeah, that I look at that and I go, yeah, this dude lives in the sticks. Him and Glisby looks at Raymond, Illinois and goes, oh, freaking Kyle Watson's from the sticks, bro. And when you see that, you go, oh, this dude came from there and coached at the time, was the first ever super gym in MMA, made it on the Ultimate Fighter, made it to the semifinals, fought in the UFC, started a jiu-jitsu school, started this massive jiu-jitsu school, has had, you know, me, an influential black belt, has my dad, an influential black belt. And it's not going to stop. And you see that this guy from the middle of nowhere, me being from the middle of nowhere, it made it so much easier to chase my dreams. Because if he could do it, and I'm learning from him, I can do it too. And so those two, without a doubt, the most influential mentors that I have ever had. And I have a lot more. You know, most of the guys, a lot of guys you've met on the show, I have that are amazing mentors to me. You guys meet Nick and Junior all the time, right? I talk about them all the time. Super influential. Mark Vives, talk about him all the time. Reference him in this episode. Super influential to me. These guys have been mentors. I've known these guys since I was young. I'm still young, you know? I mean, maybe depending on who you ask, I guess, at this point. But since I was like very young, let's move on. If you could go back in time to when you were a white belt, what advice would you give yourself? Leave your school and start doing steroids. No, I'm just joking. I think the biggest thing for me would be don't get in the mindset that there is only one way to do things in jiu-jitsu. And I think I stayed out of that mindset for a lot of my jiu-jitsu, but I still noticed it creeped in at certain points. And so if you can avoid that, though, I think that that is the best mindset that you can have. It's just avoiding falling into that, oh, I'm trying to find the right way, the perfect way, and understand that there are other right ways. And I think that that helps people's growth so much. Oof. Last question. I wish I had pre-done these questions because this one's a little too deep to finish with. We should have done something funny. How do you balance demands of being a competitor, coach, and podcast host without burning out? I really think that if you have the right team, that's how you do those things. You know, for me, my podcast got better when I brought Bryce on, or my content got better when I brought Bryce on, right? We built the team. As a coach, my coaching is better when I'm also relying on Bionic Rob, and I'm relying on my dad, relying on the other black belts at my gym. As a competitor, my competition is better when I don't have to be my own coach, when I get to just rely on the mentors I was just telling you about. What could I be doing better? What should I be focused on? What, you know, what kind of training are we doing today? What should I be competing in? I just look at those things and I see how much it allows me to grow. Sees how much it allows me to flourish because I have the right people around me. And I don't think that you can ever have the right people around you if you don't know how to accept criticism. And I think that that is why most people cannot build a team, is because they cannot accept criticism. They cannot have somebody tell them, Josh, you got to stop eating donuts stuffed M&Ms, M&M stuffed donuts. Either way, I would eat either of those things. I'm going to send that idea to M&M right now, though. Having a donut in the middle of the M&M, that's genius. But those things, having people that can tell you the hard truths, that is so important. And then people you can trust, people you can rely on. All those people I just talked about, like as I've been getting ready to have this baby, I know I can rely on all those people. And that is how I balance all those things. That's why those things aren't hard and they're joyful in my life. They're things that I love to do because I have the right people around me to help me get there, to help me grow those things. And If you want to learn how to do that better, you should read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and it will tell you, teach you how to relate with people so much better than I ever could. And that's pretty much all I have for you guys today. This is the last episode that we won't do a true intro or outro with, because it's just easier for me to upload this way. And we will be back with theme music and probably, I mean, I'm going to be off for a couple of weeks, probably getting a little bored at some points. I'm sure I'm going to be coming back with the heat, coming back with the fire on the podcast starting next week. Don't forget the last day to order the rash guards, the shorts, the gis, the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show garb. The last way to order it, last day to order it is Halloween win at midnight. Don't forget it. Don't be up at Halloween at midnight being like, wait, there was something I was supposed to do besides eat all these M&Ms and donuts. Make sure that you guys remember to get your freaking I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show gear so you'll stop messaging me and saying, hey, when's the next presale going to come? When's the next presale going to come? I'm sorry for making fun of you guys' voice like that. I know you all don't sound like that, but in my head you do. I've recorded too many episodes today. That's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and I hope that it helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.